Hello, hi everyone. Welcome back to the Mind Body Her podcast. I'm your host, Mia Harris, registered holistic nutritionist. So today's episode was inspired. I watched the recent The Biggest Loser documentary about a couple weeks ago now. If you've never watched The Biggest Loser, it was a reality TV show where contestants competed to lose weight. Some of the transformations were very, very dramatic, and people lost hundreds of pounds in the matter of, I think it was around 6 months was the length of the shows. The focus was really on these really intense workouts. A lot of the clips were, I'm sure a lot of you know, Jillian Michaels, like yelling at people throwing up in their workouts, crazy calorie restriction. What kind of came from the documentary was interesting was that some people were eating around 800 calories per day and burning up to 6,000 calories a day, which is absolutely wild. Some of the controversies around it, to be honest, wasn't too wild. When I was watching the documentary, I thought there was going to be more kind of crazy things, but a lot of it was just really extreme calorie deficit, trainers being kind of too much in people's face and almost abusive, and using caffeine pills. That was really the gist of it. But one of the things that really came out of it that I noticed, and that I even noticed when the show was happening, was that a lot of the contestants were losing these extreme amounts of weight, but having a really hard time maintaining it. And many of the contestants gaining the weight back, if not more, the years following after the show. So a 2016 study actually followed the contestants from the show and found that their metabolism had slowed down dramatically for years later after the show. So that meant their bodies were burning fewer calories per day than was expected, and it was just making it really hard to maintain that weight loss. So really, like, the part that nobody really talks about is that extreme weight loss comes at a cost. And so that really inspired today's podcast, where I wanted to talk about the implications of doing yo-yo diets, how it impacts your metabolic health, your hunger, why it's so hard to maintain weight loss after these extreme calorie restrictions, and what's happening from a physiological standpoint. And then I also wanted to lead into the conversation about GLP-1 agonists. So we're going to transition into that and things that you can do for the long haul, especially if weight loss is your goal, what the appropriate protocol should be if weight loss is your goal, and how to maintain that for the long term. So let's just get into it and talk about how yo-yo dieting impacts your metabolic health. So basically, yo-yo dieting is when you lose weight, typically through a restriction, and then usually we'll gain that back, or that kind of all or nothing approach. I know lots of us have probably been there. I was there myself, where you would go hard with a diet and lose weight in a month or 2 months, and then it was just too hard to maintain. So you would give up, go back to your old eating habits, and the weight would come back on, and it was this constant cycle of being on again and then falling off. Here's what happens. When you restrict your calories, your body is incredibly smart. I am always amazed about how adaptive the body is. And a lot of these functions, like, we want to beat ourselves up with it, but it's just our body is designed to protect us and ensure our survival. So when it detects that we are restricting our calories, we're not getting a ton of calories coming in after being in a surplus or maintaining our body weight for a while, the body gets smart and starts to go, okay, we're only getting this amount of calories in per day. We're expending this amount of calories per day. We're going to run out of fuel here if we keep going this. So we need to downregulate our metabolic rate and prioritize the things that are most important. And it's also going to drive up things like your hunger hormones, like leptin and ghrelin, which are hormones that tell you when you're full and satiated. Typically, people are going to be thinking about food all the time when they're doing these intense diets. Obviously, that's going to be a big one. Most of us know that you're going to be a little bit hungry if you are in a calorie deficit, and especially if you are in an extreme caloric deficit. So your hunger hormones are going to ramp up. You're also not going to feel as satiated after you eat a meal at the same time. So after your diet, you're not only going to be hungrier, but your body is also going to be less sensitive to feeling full. So that's just a recipe for overeating. On top of that, your thyroid. So your thyroid's a little butterfly-shaped gland that is located in your neck. And so it can get downregulated. So your metabolic rate will actually slow down if your body senses there's a bit of a famine, and it will try to conserve energy by slowing your metabolic rate. And so you're going to burn fewer calories even when you're resting, even when you're not exercising, you're just doing nothing but kind of surviving through the day. Muscle mass loss. This is a big one. And we'll talk about this, especially as we get into the GLP-1s. But muscle mass, unless you're really focused on strength training and eating enough protein specifically, you will lose muscle mass while you're dieting. Muscle is metabolically active tissue. So when we don't have enough muscle, it means our metabolic rate is going to go down. Muscle acts like sponge and just sops up excess glucose in the system. So it's super important and a huge metabolic driver to have quality muscle, especially as we age. Typically for women and for men, we start to lose muscle mass as we age. We have to be really, really aware of that and making sure we're putting precautionary measures in there so that we don't lose that too much. So things like under eating and not doing enough strength training, having poor routines, those sorts of things will all impact our overall muscle mass. Other thing too is muscle mass is tied directly with bone health. So especially for women, as we age, really important to make sure we're maintaining that muscle mass, we're eating enough, getting enough protein, and doing some strength training to support bone health as we age. I've seen that pretty commonly in practice with women coming through in their 50s and struggling with things like osteoporosis. And oftentimes that's coming back to that undernourishment piece. So really important to make sure that we are not undernourishing ourselves, especially if weight is on our mind. So beyond weight, yo-yo dieting can show up as things like hair loss or brittle nails, fatigue, mood swings, poor recovery after workout, higher stress levels. So it's just very stressful on our whole system if we are maintaining that mentality of eating less and eating small amounts, really restricting and then coupling that with over-exercising. It's just a recipe for hormonal havoc. And going back to that survival mechanism, the body's going, well, we're only getting these calories and these nutrients, we need to be really smart and strategic about how we're utilizing them. Do we really need to have strong nails and nice hair? Not really. There's other functions in our body that are more important for survival than those things. So it's really important to kind of keep that in mind. And one of the big things that I look at if somebody's coming to me for things like fatigue, low energy, and even hair loss is this person eating enough calories, and specifically eating enough protein and getting enough of their micronutrients in as well. But hair loss could be a whole podcast all on its own. The interesting thing that came up when I was watching this was the percentage of people that are overweight or obese in North America. We've known this for many, many years. I actually read a book from a fellow named Dr. Jason Fung, The Obesity Code, and I was mind boggled when I was reading this book. It really speaks to things like how we got here as a society. We have this interesting paradox that's happening in North America. We have 75% of people in America are classified as overweight or obese. So we have this society and population that are really struggling with their weight. It's really interesting to look at the progression that has happened over the past 50 years of how we actually got to this place. Let's talk about that a little bit. I think there's the obvious things, like we have a lot of highly processed foods, high sugar diets, those highly palatable foods, the chips, the chocolate, the candies, the muffins and sweet treats, fast food joints, sedentary lifestyles. A lot of us are sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day. We're not getting a lot of movement in, right? So just that overall kind of eating more and exercising less, yes, that is part of the equation. But then there are less obvious contributors that are things like changes in the food recommendations, even going back to the 80s when we saw the trend of the low fat. Everybody was eating low fat diet, but what that meant, they were consuming more carbohydrates because those calories had to come from somewhere else. And even in foods, they weren't tasting as good. Higher fat foods, if you've ever had a higher fat yogurt, it tastes way better than the low fat yogurt. And so in order to make those taste better, we had to inject them with things like sugar to make them more palatable. So then we created this eating a higher carbohydrate, which potentially could lead to things like type 2 diabetes, maybe, or insulin resistance. There was also the food pyramid. So if we remember the food pyramid back in the 90s, that was especially in Canada, where the recommendations were to eat like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 servings of grains throughout the day, and also large amounts of dairy. This was all funded, the dairy and the grain companies. This wasn't necessarily in the minds of having the best health for Canadians in order to promote people to eat those more. But again, higher calories, more carbohydrates. Not that the carbohydrates are bad, but we were just eating those things in excess. So thankfully, things have changed with the food guide. I actually really like what the food guide is right now, but really, really interesting. There's actually another layer on there as well about the women's rights movement, which, please don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely for. But women were going back to work. The typical standard was the dad went to work, mom stayed home, tended the kids in the house and cooked the meals. But now mom's going to work as well. So there's not as much time to maybe curate those healthy meals from home. So there were more processed foods and more packaged foods that were coming in. So there's kind of chatter around how that could be contributing to this obesity and weight epidemic that we're having currently, which I think is a very interesting perspective. I think a lot with my husband and I guess we spend a lot of time on food. We grow a garden, we make sourdough bread, we source good quality products. We put a lot of time and effort into our meals and we enjoy that. But I also don't have kids. I work from home. I have a lot of luxuries, right? So I know that's not feasible for everybody to do. And if you're a busy mom with three kids and you're working and you're looking after your household, it's not necessary in your wheelhouse to be able to do all those things. It's an interesting perspective when I heard somebody speak to that. So I thought I would share that. I wanted that to actually lead into kind of the next phase, which is actually talking about Ozempic weight loss drugs, Wegovy, those GLP-1 receptor agonists. I probably had 5 or 6 clients over the last year. A number of different reasons have come in. I've had somebody who had started taking the drug and had lost a significant amount of weight without really making a whole lot of changes, but wanting to do things healthier and create healthier habits. Totally support that. I've also had clients who have done the work who are incredibly hardworking women who are working out and exercising and making changes with their diet, but their weight just isn't really shifting in the way that they're wanting to. So we look at layering in one of these GLP-1 and honestly working with their doctors at the same time too. So I support both. Sometimes people are surprised that I say that, but I've worked with women specifically for almost a decade. I know how hard it is to lose weight, especially if there's a hormonal component to it. So things like hypothyroidism or insulin resistance, PCOS. So these drugs can be absolutely life-changing for people. You have to outweigh the pros and cons of taking these drugs. Are the consequences of taking this drug going to outweigh the consequences of being overweight or obese? We're seeing it all over social media. A lot of big time influencers sharing their, health journeys and their experiences on taking these drugs. We've seen celebrities. Oprah, Serena Williams has spoken about her taking these as well. I feel like there's a lot of draw and it can feel really challenging sometimes with clients who are wanting to do it the natural way and wanting to make changes to their diet and their health and their lifestyle. But it's a slow go sometimes. It's a slow burn. And that's okay. That's actually what we want when we're looking at long-term weight loss success. But it can be hard to want to gain that momentum when it feels like you're working really, really hard and the numbers just not really moving. And then Susan at work jumps on the medication and she's losing 10 pounds in a month without seemingly doing anything. So it can be a little bit disheartening when we hear that. So I'll talk about some strategies that you can utilize and actually mimic the results of those GLP-1 agonists through food. And also I'll share some supplementation as well. But let's first and foremost talk about what drugs like Ozempic actually are and what they're doing in the body. Those drugs are originally designed for managing type 2 diabetes. GLP-1 receptor agonists, so that means that they mimic a hormone in our body that helps to regulate our blood sugar and also our appetite. So essentially it slows digestion, it keeps food in the stomach longer, and helps to reduce cravings. So that's why a lot of people really find it easier to eat less while they're on it. That's the main driver of weight loss, is eating in a caloric deficit, which means you're eating less calories and your body is burning throughout the day. A lot of people can have challenges with managing their appetite. They have crazy appetite. They're thinking about food all the time. Maybe they have lots of sugar cravings, carbohydrate cravings, especially if you struggle with things like insulin resistance. Insulin resistance means that your body is not utilizing glucose as well as it should be. So this is very common with women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, but it's also common with women as we start to age, get into perimenopause, menopausal years, our body starts to get more insulin resistant. in combination with the decline in estrogen. So estrogen and insulin play a very delicate role with each other. So that's why I typically hear from women, you know, they're hitting 40, 45, going, I'm doing all the same things I was doing in my 20s and 30s, but all of a sudden my weight is just continuing to creep up. That can be a big cause. And that doesn't necessarily mean we just need to eat less and less and less. It means we need to get strategic and more so focused on blood sugar regulation. Okay. For people who have struggled with that food noise, it can be a game changer. So food noise, I find there's two different types of food noise. It's that constant mental chatter about food. So if maybe you've just had breakfast and you're starting to think about, what am I going to have next? I'm thinking, well, I want some sweets. I want some chocolate. I want this. And it just feels like food is on your brain all the time. It's not like you're eating and moving on with your day and thinking about other things. You're thinking about food constantly. And that's very common with people with insulin resistance because the brain thinks, hey, we're not getting enough fuel because that glucose isn't getting into the cells to be utilized as energy. So your body keeps telling you to go out and look. And also you're on these wild blood sugar roller coasters throughout the day. So that can be in combination also with things like leptin resistance. Leptin, again, is that hormone that helps to tell our brain that we're full, we've had enough to eat. Oftentimes, insulin resistance and leptin resistance can go together. And so when you have that, it's very, very hard to stick to your healthy eating routine and maintain that calorie deficit, right? Other food noise is more so about dieting, where people are constantly second guessing their choices. Okay, I'm hungry. I'm going to eat this thing. Why did I eat that? Did that have too many carbohydrates? Did it have too many calories in it? Too much fat? Not enough protein? Why did I choose to eat that? Why didn't I just have enough willpower? I'm going to do better at my next meal. So there's that too, that either just constant chatter about food or the constant chatter about making the right or wrong decision, especially towards your weight loss goal. And that can be incredibly exhausting on both ends of it. So drugs like the GLP-1 receptor agonists can be helpful for somebody with insulin resistance, or even things like ADHD or binge eating disorders, where you can have the best intentions, but sometimes there's a kind of underlying psychological drives that will push you to make certain food choices, especially ones for those more highly palatable foods like sweets and candies and chocolates and chips and things like that too. A lot of the times what I hear is people feel very out of control around food. They're trying to grasp onto some sort of control by having those rote meal plans or tracking everything that they're doing, but then hunger hits in, cravings hit in, and they just feel out of control. These drugs can help people gain that control and then better implement diet and lifestyle changes. But with anything, there's a catch. So sometimes people can regain the weight after they stop taking that drug. So many, many people who are taking these weight loss drugs may have to take even a microdose for a long period of time, unless they're really, really good at in changing those underlying habits and making sure they're supporting their metabolic rate. Sometimes the body might revert back. There can also be side effects. One of the biggest ones that I have seen are more so to digestive upset. So a lot of nausea, sometimes vomiting, loose stools, or constipation. Not to mention, it's kind of expensive and not always necessarily accessible. I've had clients, if it's not covered under medical, up to $400 per month. So let's talk a little bit about nutrition support if you are wanting to take these drugs, but also if you're wanting to lose weight in a natural way, some things that you can do to mimic the same things that these drugs are actually doing. So nutrition is very, very important. The biggest thing to think about is to preserve muscle mass, especially if appetite is lower. So sometimes appetite can get very, very blunted. So the person is just not feeling as hungry and not therefore not as motivated to eat. But we still need to be getting calories in. We still need to be getting nutrients in and protein because we can't run off of air. Ideally, I would say for most women, whether you're taking medication or not, a good place to aim for is 90 to 100 grams of protein per day. You might even want to be pushing that up if you are doing lots of strength training and looking at doing some body composition changes, but starting there and tweaking things as you go can be a good place to start. A lot of the times what I see with women on a weight loss journey and they're starting to eat more protein is that it can all of a sudden feel like you're eating a whole bunch more when you've forever been told that you need to eat less in order to lose weight. So it can be a little bit of a mental challenge to start to incorporate and eat more protein. Fiber is also going to be essential. So that is what is going to support your digestive health and keep your gut moving. So enough fiber, very, very important. Hydration also really important as well. Getting some electrolytes in can be helpful. Making sure we're balancing our meals out to keep blood sugar steady. And then, of course, incorporating some strength training to help with that metabolic rate and muscle mass. If you are wanting to do things in a more natural way, one of the biggest things that I typically focus on is blood sugar regulation. The main reason why, if we go back to actually what those GLP-1s do, is it slows down how fast the stomach is emptying. Instead of, let's give you a couple of different examples to visualize this. Let's say you have a meal that is primarily carbohydrates. So you have a bowl of oatmeal or some cereal or a piece of toast with some honey or jam on it, or a muffin or a sugary Starbucks drink. All those foods are high carb, high sugar. There's not a lot of protein, not a lot of fiber, not a lot of fats going on there. And so what happens is they digest very, very quickly. So then you get all this energy in your bloodstream at once. And unless you're going for a run or going to work out or utilize those nutrients and the calories and the sugar, you're just going to sit at your desk at work. You're not utilizing that glucose. Guess where it's going to get stored? You named it as excess weight. So ideally what we want to do when we are looking at our meals is to have a combination of protein, fat, and fiber. What that does is it slows down how quickly the stomach is emptying. It's like you're getting a little bit of energy at a time. It's like your food is breaking down and it's going, here's some energy. Okay, we're going to utilize that. Here's a little bit more. Here's a little bit more. So it's more steady. So you get this nice even flow rather than these big peaks and valleys. Because the other thing that happens if we're eating too much carbs, too much sugar, is then you get that drop in blood sugar too. And that's when you start to feel maybe a little bit shaky, hangry, brain fog. You get those cravings that kind of kick in too. So when we eat meals that are more balanced, we're less likely to be thinking about food all the time. We're less likely to have those crazy sugar cravings as well. And it's also just a main foundation for better digestion, better hormone health, better energy, better moods at the same time. I feel like I'm a broken record when I talk about blood sugar regulation. I have a whole guide on my website if you need some extra support on how to build your meals out. But ideally, those are the things that you should be thinking about. Protein is the main star of the show. Lots of non-starchy vegetables. That's also very full of fiber. Lots of your vitamins and your minerals are there and very, very satiating. Good carbohydrates that have some fiber in there and then some healthy fats. That's my gentle plate structure that I talk to almost every single client. Other thing is also ensuring, we talked about protein already, really, really honing in on that. Protein is very satiating. It actually triggers to the brain to turn off of those hunger hormones. Carbohydrates don't have that same impact on our hunger hormones. So that's why it's really, really easy to overeat on things like a bag of chips or candies or muffins and those sweet things. You don't typically hear people like, oh my God, I ate way too much chicken breast and broccoli, right? Those foods are very satiating. They turn off hunger hormones. So prioritizing protein is so important, especially if you're somebody that struggles with like binge eating after dinner or like intense cravings. A good area that I like to focus on, I say at the minimum, your meal should have 20 grams of protein. The more the better, like I would say upwards of 30, in some cases even 40 at your meal. So if you break that down into three meals per day, let's say you have 30, 60, 90 at your main meals, and then maybe you play around with your snacks, that's going to get you up around over 100 grams of protein. So that's a gentle rule I like to think about as well. And the easiest way to do that is tracking your calories and tracking your macros for a little bit to see where you stand, and also understand which foods are good sources of protein at the same time. A couple other hacks that you can do. So apple cider vinegar, any vinegar in general, can further delay gastric emptying. Incorporating some acidity to your meals can be really helpful. Even if that's like a dressing with a little bit of apple cider vinegar or vinegar in it, or a squeeze of lemon, that can help slow down gastric emptying. Or the other trick you can utilize is 1 to 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar in about a third to a half of a cup of room temperature water before meals. You get a 2-for-1 there. One, it's going to be really helpful for digestion, and two, it's going to be really helpful for blood sugar. Also go for walks after meals. So walking after meals, even just for 10 minutes, can help lower blood glucose levels by up to 30%. Building muscle mass. Muscle sops up excess glucose, so really important to get some strength training in. There are also foods that have lots of fiber in it. Citrus fruits, bitter foods like arugula and different types of greens, and buckwheat actually have similar impacts on stimulating GLP-1 in the body as well too. So eating whole foods, eating more fiber, getting some acidity in there can be very helpful. As far as supplementation goes, there are two that I typically use with clients who struggle with things like insulin resistance. So if somebody is struggling with things like polycystic ovarian syndrome, a supplement that I really like is inositol. So inositol is actually a B vitamin that helps your body to regulate glucose levels and insulin production and helps those cells better uptake glucose. So I like to utilize that with my clients that have PCOS. Berberine is also a herbal supplement that can be helpful, but whenever we are taking any of these supplements, you just want to be very careful and very mindful, especially if you're taking medications already, that we don't couple these things with things like these GLP-1s or metformin, those sorts of things. Otherwise, we can run into some challenges. So make sure before taking any supplementation that you check in with your doctor to make sure that it's okay and there's no counterindications with any of the medications that you're on. Vitamin D would be also one that is very important. I see low vitamin D levels actually quite frequently. So if you're not taking vitamin D, you need to be. Even throughout the summer months, unless you're outside like tanning buck naked every single day at the optimal times and getting that natural vitamin D from the sunlight, you should be taking a vitamin D all through the summer and then higher doses in the winter when we're in those darker, colder months. Vitamin D is important for regulating blood sugar and insulin and our mental, emotional health as well. Just to recap, whether it's a TV show like The Biggest Loser or it's yo-yo dieting or even medications like Ozempic, the theme is the same. There aren't any shortcuts. Your body thrives when you support it with consistency, nourishment, and realistic lifestyle changes. So yo-yo dieting teaches us how much our hormones and metabolism push back when we try to outsmart them. And Ozempic really shows that even with modern medicine, lifestyle still matters. So it's not just taking this medication and doing the same things that we were doing before. We have to make these lifestyle and diet changes in combination with them, or we're going to forever be stuck. Sustainable health is really built upon the basics. So that means fueling our body well, managing our stress, supporting our hormones, and building habits that you can actually keep. It never impresses me when somebody can lose a large amount in a month or 2 months or 3 months. I'm like, that is great. But are you able to sustain that and keep that off for the long term? That is what impresses me. These diets can seem very, very enticing at the beginning, right? Where you're just kind of sick and tired of holding on to this excess weight. You want it to be gone. But I promise you, whatever you do to lose the weight is what you're going to have to do in order to keep that weight off. If you can't see yourself doing it for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years from now, then don't bother doing it. If you're doing keto to lose weight, you're probably going to have to stay doing keto to lose weight. If you're doing intermittent fasting to lose weight, you're probably going to have to do some sort of intermittent fasting to lose weight. If you're training for a marathon to lose weight, you're probably going to have to keep training for a marathon to lose weight. Right? So I think about that sustainability piece. And yes, it's going to take longer, but it's that long game is what we want to play. Ideally, what my goal is with my clients when I'm working with them for weight loss is to get them to a place where things just become second nature. They're just doing things that make them feel good and feel good mentally, emotionally, physically, right? And building those habits that they can maintain long term. And it just becomes a lifestyle. So if you like today's episode, make sure you follow the podcast and share it with a friend who might be curious about these topics. And if you're looking for personalized support to balance your hormones, to lose weight, then check out my programs at www.miaharrisnutrition.com. And see you next time.